You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. You are listening to our Best Deal Ever episode with Marco Santarelli. Marco, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Glad to be here.
Good. Thanks for being on the show, Marco. So Marco is an investor, he's an author, and he's founder of Narada Real Estate Investments, a national real estate investment firm. They offer turnkey investment properties, which is why Marco and I know each other. Actually, interesting story. So 6-7 years ago, I asked my office manager to figure out who are the big players in the world of turnkey. And she literally just Googled real estate investing in the U.S., and Marco came up number one, his Narada Real Estate Investments. So I reached out to him, sort of cold turkey, introduced myself and said, hey man, I want to be your provider of properties in Atlanta. 6-7 years later, we're still buddies. We've been selling properties for a while. We've done some investments together. He's a really good guy. His business model, I think, is phenomenal, selling turnkey properties in all sorts of different markets. But Marco, before you got into selling turnkey properties, before you started Narada Real Estate, how did you get into real estate? What was your entry point?
Well, thanks for the wonderful introduction, Ken. That was amazing. I appreciate that. My story is nothing that I would label as amazing. I jumped into real estate when I was 18 years old. As soon as I turned 18, I was able to qualify for financing. And that's when I made the decision that I should be in real estate. And I didn't come from a family that was privileged or had a lot of money. Both my parents worked. In fact, my mother worked two jobs just to make ends meet for a period of time. And neither one of my parents ever invested in real estate. So for me, it was something I just knew about. It wasn't something that I grew up with. And when I turned 18, I decided to jump in. So I went out and I jumped in head first. I bought a townhome. It needed work. So I brought in my uncle, who was a contractor. And with his help and a few family members, we gutted the place, renovated it. I started taking applications after sticking a sign in the lawn. I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest with you, but I started screening tenants or prospective tenants. Eventually decided on someone, brought them in, and then, you know, managed it for a number of years and then later sold it. And I made a nice little profit on that property. Looking back today, my biggest regret is actually selling that property because I just didn't know what I know today. In fact, I knew very little back then. Hmm. Looking back, I picked that property up for, I think, $40,000 or $50,000. But today, that property is worth close to $400,000.
Oh my gosh. What market was this in?
Well, this was in Calgary, Canada.
Okay.
But, you know, real estate is real estate. It doesn't make a difference whether it's, you know, in the U.S. or Canada. But, you know, the lesson learned here is that $40,000 property has kept up or exceeded the rate of inflation from when I bought it, which was, you know, decades ago, many mm-hmm. years ago. So if you buy real estate, it's true that real estate is historically the greatest wealth creation vehicle in existence. So if you buy property, hold property and keep it for the long term. But that was how I got started. I jumped in at 18 and then I thought, well, this is great. I'll do it again. So I went and bought a condo and, you know, that was where I got my start. Then, you know, I got my real estate license and started selling real estate. I hated it because I felt like I was just chauffeuring people in the backseat of my car and, you know.
Essentially you were.
I was. I mean, you know, and, you know, the thing you hate to hear is the wife saying, oh, I don't like the color of the cabinets or the, you know, the paint on the wall or this or that. It's just a struggle. But, you know, you fast forward over time because I've been a serial entrepreneur. I was a co-founder in a pre-IPO.com company back in late 1990s. And unfortunately, when the stock market crashed in March of 2000, all our venture capital funding dried up. You know, that was $9.5 million later. And we had a staff of about 110, and I had to lay off over one third of those people that were working for us. And, you know, that was in 2001 when things were finally wound down. And then I sat back and I thought, well, what do I want to do now? You know, I've got some real estate, I've got some real estate experience, but I love all this new technology and the internet and the possibilities. And I just literally took about 2 years off and just sat back and twiddled my thumbs and just thought about what I want to do. And then in 2003, as you, I'm sure everybody remembers, you know, everybody and the taxi driver were talking about real estate, and the appreciation across the country in every market was, you know, going off the charts. I mean, if you looked at real estate, everybody thought they were a real estate investor because they bought a piece of property and it was appreciating, you know, 10-15% every year.
Right.
Well, that's speculating. That's not really investing. But then one day I got an email from Robert G. Allen. And for your listeners that really are not familiar with who Robert Allen is, he, you know, he's a very famous author. He's authored probably close to 20 books that you can find on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And he's most famous for Nothing Down. I believe that's the name of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how I got on his mailing list, but I got this email from his Enlightened Wealth Institute division, and they were having a seminar, free weekend seminar here in Orange County, California. I thought, well, you know what? It just found me at the right time. So I went to the seminar, and there were probably close to 2,000 people in this massive convention room.
Holy cow.
It was huge. And they had one of the most amazing speakers I've ever seen in my life. His first name is Glenn. I'm not going to mention his last name for just in case people know, you know, who I'm talking about. But he was amazing. He had everybody riveted to their seats. But the pitch was this, you know, he's giving you a good education and a pitch fest on real estate investing. But at the end of the day, they're selling these workshops or boot camps. And the price tag was, I believe the smallest package was $15,000 and the largest package was $25,000. And then over time, they ramped it up to $35,000. But it was amazing to see how many people were running to the back of the room with a credit card in hand to buy, you know, these five and six day boot camps around the country. So not only did you have to pay for the boot camp, but you had to pay for your flight and accommodations to get to the various cities around the country to actually go to these events.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know at the time, but looking back, I'm thinking, geez, you know, $25,000-$35,000 for this quote unquote education could have put, you know, a nice down payment on one or two properties.
Sure.
So, but it was actually a good thing. It was a good thing that happened because I just decided to go along with it. I signed up for, you know, their big package, their six boot camp package. And I started going to these events in late 2003. And this was a turning point in my life because not only did I get back into real estate investing where I started buying up tons of properties over the next 2 to 3 years, but something interesting happened in late 2003 and in January 2004. I got invited back to speak at one of the events. It was actually the foreclosure boot camp.
Hmm.
And throughout the year 2004, I actually ended up co-instructing it. I kept going back once or twice a month to, you know, a Midwest, actually it was in the Northeast, a city where we were doing this foreclosure boot camp. And I was meeting literally hundreds upon hundreds of investors that were going through the same boot camps I went through. And at the end of the day, less than 5% were actually pulling the trigger and buying a property. But at the same time, they were coming to me saying, hey, Marco, where did you find this property? How did you negotiate it? How did you find it? You know, how did you structure the financing? How did you analyze the numbers?
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the point where I was giving some of these deals to investors and saying, here, here's a deal on a silver platter. You take it and run with it. And then I thought, well, geez, you know, there's an opportunity here. You know, why don't I just set this up as a business where I can actually do the due diligence research, find the deals and kind of package it, give you 70% of what you need. And then maybe help you with the rest. At least that was the theory at the time. Hmm. But that quickly became the beginning of Norada Real Estate Investments, is just the identification of investors wanting to invest, knowing that they want to invest. So they have the will, the desire, the capacity, the credit, the cash. but now they just don't have the experience or the time to do everything on their own. Hence, you know, turnkey real estate investing, you know, came into the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the business, sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, it's funny about your story is back in 2000, probably seven, one of my primary referral sources was an instructor at one of those, the big education companies. I won't say which one. It was the exact same story. All these guys had paid all this money to go through these boot camps and get the education. They still didn't have any deals. And so they were talking to the instructors, where do I find deals? The instructors were sending them to me in Atlanta, and I was selling Atlanta turnkey properties to these same guys. I didn't realize that's how your business got started. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I kind of fell into it. I mean, I was perceptive enough to see the opportunity,
sure.
But at the same time, you know, I recognized that this is something I needed to do. Now, from my research at the time, there was really only one other company in the country that I knew of that would be considered a nationwide provider of property. And they didn't refer to it as turnkey at the time. The concept or the term turnkey really just came about more so in the last 3 to 5 years. It's been, you know, coming onto the radar, and investors are talking about that term and throwing it around more and more. So maybe it happened kind of after the 2008 housing implosion.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like providers, like even like myself, sort of were popping up all over in different markets. And I'm not sure at what point the actual phrase got coined turnkey, but we were all sort of doing the same thing or something similar.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, all these local rehabbers, and there's many of them all over the country, you know, every city seems to have their own mom and pop operations. And then there's larger operations like your, you know, your company. But whether they call themselves turnkey providers or not, at the end of the day, a lot of them are doing that, you know, type of business. They're buying, rehabbing properties and then selling them to investors. And if they're providing all the pieces that go along with it and helping the investor, holding their hand, taking them through the process, then yeah, I can call them a turnkey provider. But having a more of a nationwide footprint, like what I was doing, mm-hmm. Just allowed me to bring in resources and people like yourself so we can help our clients and then help them choose the right markets and the right people to work with. So they have their goals, they have their criteria. And, you know, a particular market like Memphis or Birmingham or Kansas City may not be the right fit for a particular investor, but Atlanta might be because it's got what they need to meet their criteria. So the nationwide presence was kind of a really good angle on what I was doing, not knowing it at the time, but it was a really good angle because it allowed me to be completely agnostic on mm-hmm. the markets and on the providers that we worked with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's still sort of the one advantage you have over a lot of other providers or somebody that came direct to a company like mine is if you have an investor that for whatever reason doesn't want Atlanta, maybe they want to be closer to home or a little higher cash flow, you could sort of point them to any market because you've done the due diligence, you've made those connections and put those relationships in place to provide in just about any market. Well, that's a great question, actually. How many markets do you have providers set up in?
Well, access to about 20 markets,
okay.
But some of those markets are markets that we've been in and out of sometimes twice, like Phoenix, Arizona is a good example, and it's a very cyclical market. It gets to the point where the numbers make sense. You could buy property there, it'll cash flow, you could hold it long term, and then you benefit from this wave of appreciation, and then it prices itself out of the market for real estate investors. So there's those markets that are, you know, either cyclical or hybrid that you kind of go in and out of as the market changes. Mm-hmm. But then you have other markets that are more perennial, and those are the markets that we're in today, which I think are about 8 or 9, you know, Atlanta being one of them. Atlanta is very much a perennial market.
Sure. Yeah. Because we don't have any crazy spikes here. We talked about this on your podcast yesterday. Atlanta's more of a steady appreciation market. It's not like a Florida or a California or a Phoenix where you got this big spike up and then the big trough down. It's more of a steady appreciation market. But then you've got other markets, maybe like the Midwest or even like a Memphis, where you probably don't have the big spikes in appreciation, but you've got some really strong cash flows. You've got very inexpensive housing.
Yeah, you know, the U.S. is made up of about 400 MSAs, as you know, metropolitan statistical areas. And so you can't lump, you know, the country into one bucket and say, well, you know, the national housing market is doing good or bad. Well, there's no such thing as a national housing market. It's broken up into all these micro markets. So what may be happening in Atlanta is not the same thing that happens in San Diego versus, you know, Detroit, Michigan. And so what happens is when investors call us and they talk to one of our investment counselors, one of the first things we talk to them about is, you know, what are your goals? What is it you're trying to achieve? And then what is your criteria? Now, 50% of the people we talk to don't know what their criteria is, and so we help them to define that. But ultimately, when you have some sort of criteria, you know, that will help you fulfill your goals, now you can say, well, these markets make sense for you. You know, if they're looking for markets that have strong growth and strong stability, and maybe the rates of return, like the cash on cash returns, aren't that strong today. They might be looking at a market like Dallas, and no, you know, Dallas is huge, so I'm generalizing here, but Dallas or Houston, you know, you've got strength and growth, but you don't have the same numbers that you had 2, 3 years ago. On the flip side, someone might say, well, you know, I don't need high appreciation. My focus is on cash flow and I want to maximize my cash on cash returns. Great. Well, let's look at, you know, some of the product that are in the you know, the outer communities of Atlanta or Birmingham or Kansas City or Indianapolis. You know, that's where you're going to find those other types of numbers and returns. So you've got to fit the investor into the market that meets their needs, not the other way around. And you know, not to beat up on any company, because I appreciate, you know, what everybody does around the country, but most turnkey providers are married to their market, meaning that they only have one set of tools to work with, and that's the properties that they have in their backyard that they've renovated. And that's all well and fine. I mean, you could be in a great market and you're providing a good service for investors. But if the investor you're talking to is not going to maximize, you know, what they're looking for or get what they're looking for from, you know, someone being in, you know, wherever, you know, Toledo, Ohio or whatever, you know, you're not really doing them a great service. You're helping them, but you're not doing what they need done, if that makes any sense.
Sure. Well, of course they're partial. I mean, if I've got an investor interested in Atlanta, I want him to spend as much money in Atlanta as possible. Yeah, it's funny though, because there is a point. I have even told investors, maybe they've bought 4 or 5 houses with me. I've told investors, hey, you probably should think about diversifying. Just, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. But understand from a provider's perspective, yeah, of course they want you to spend as much money as they can, and they're going to tell you how great their market is. You know, where like you said, I think you put it well, you're agnostic to them. You want to put your investor in the most diversified and best situation, you know, for whatever situation they're in.
Yeah, exactly. And it's good to be nimble. I mean, to be agnostic across the board, you know, agnostic on the market, the providers, the property managers, the title companies, the inspectors, the lenders and mortgage brokers. To be agnostic across the board just means that we can re remove and replace these companies that we work with that we, you know, say that are in our network as needed. And we've done that. In fact, in the last year, we've had to quote unquote fire 2 property management companies because they just were falling short. Their communication was, you know, poor, slow. They were starting to place tenants that just didn't pan out. You know, they would turn over fairly quickly. And so, you know, you'd talk to them and see if things can get sorted out and figured out. And if that problem repeats itself, well, at that point you just say, well, look, I'm going to have to put you on the do not call list because, you know, we can't work with you anymore. You're just not providing a good service for anybody at that point.
Which, I mean, that's great for your investors because they're sort of leveraging your platform where you're doing so many deals and you see who the good lenders are, you see who the bad property management companies are, who the good rehab providers are, and you're able to steer them away from potential problems.
Yeah, and we all want that. I mean, that's, you know, the things that we want for our clients are exactly the same things that you want for your clients. You know, we always want to work with the best because if a deal doesn't close, it's costing you money. You know, you've got carrying costs. You're paying interest every day on that property until it actually sells.
Sure.
So it's eating into your margins.
Yep. Don't I know it?
Yep.
I know all about it, man. So what's What's a typical investor look like that comes through Narada?
I'm not so sure there's a typical investor. We get people that call us that are what they refer to as newbies. They call themselves newbies. You know, they've got the bug. They read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. They know they need to start investing and they've got some capital and they've never bought a property before. Or maybe they bought their principal residence and they're just getting started. Mm-hmm. That's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum are people that will call us and say, I've got, actually, here's a recent example. There's a person that we're talking to now. He's got $2 million from the sale of a business and he's looking to place $1 million in private notes and $1 million in property. But he's defined his goals. You know, he's saying, look, I need to make $20,000 a month passive income by the time all is said and done and I've built my portfolio. Great. We've got a roadmap. You know, well, we're going to work with him to build that roadmap out. And so that's the spectrum. And there's everything in between. But if I had to paint the picture of a typical investor, I'd say it's someone who is looking to purchase one or two properties per year because that's their capacity, maybe more, and do that for as long as they can until they've built up the size of portfolio that will meet their either their retirement goals or their monthly cash flow goals. You know, a typical investor will buy more than one. Sure. It's very rare that you find someone that buys one and then they're done. You know, if they're going to buy one, they're going to buy two and then they're going to buy three and then they're going to buy four and so on.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Once you get the bug and you see, hey, this is great. I'm generating some cash flow for myself, especially when you've got the ability to use leverage, you're not spending that much money, you know, investing in a single property. You might as well do a couple more.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as you've got the ability to do it and you've already made the decision to invest in real estate, because you have to decide on an asset class. You know, are you going to be in paper assets like equity, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, which, you know, is a scary proposition? Or are you going to go into hard assets like precious metals or real estate or oil and gas? I hate to bring that up because you and I are, you know, investors in oil and gas. So, you know, when you make the decision to get into income producing real estate, I think you've made a fantastic decision and now you have to build it out. Now you build your portfolio. And I like to tell investors, as a very general rule of thumb, purchase 3 to 5 properties in 3 to 5 markets. And that's just a very general rule of thumb. You know, some investors will just say, hey, I love Kansas City. I'm going to buy 10 of them there and then move to Atlanta and buy 5 there and then move to a third market and then round out my portfolio that way. So diversity is important, but that's how you do it with real estate.
Now, do you find that a lot of your investors come from like the West Coast where real estate's so expensive, there's just not opportunity to buy in their backyard?
Yeah, California is like probably the poster child state for the number of investors that, you know, come to us or any other company for that matter. I don't know about your business, but California is certainly at the top of the list.
Yeah, a lot of them have equity. They've got strong income and there's just no opportunity to buy cash flowing assets in California.
Exactly. I mean, you look at the numbers here and this is not true for all of California, because as you go inland, you'll find rent to value ratios are going to be, you know, rather attractive. They'll be around 1%. But if you get to the coast, especially from San Francisco, but, you know, the coastal California markets are 0.5, 0.4, maybe 0.3% rent to value ratio. And that just simply means you take your monthly gross rent, divide it into the purchase price or the acquisition cost. And that ratio gives you the RV ratio. What we like to see is 1% or more, ideally. And for me, I loosely define a 1% RV ratio market as a balanced market. If it's higher than that, great. You know, you're going to have better numbers. If it's lower than that, you can still have a good deal, but you're not going to have the same cash on cash return and overall ROI that you will in other markets. But back to your question. California, New Jersey, New York, you know, many pockets up in the Northeast are so expensive and the numbers just don't make sense that we get a lot of the calls from investors in those particular markets because they just can't do anything in their backyard. And if they can, it's not that it's impossible, but in many cases, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, compounded with the other problem that a lot of these people that have cash or are equity rich, you know, are professionals, they have family, they have other obligations, so they don't have the time, the time to actually find those deals and work them. So that's why they come to you and us, is they're looking for someone to help them build their portfolio with turnkey real estate, you know, to bypass 70% of that hard work and hassle, to, you know, just to build up that portfolio.
Yep. And that is that, that really is, that's sort of it in a nutshell. What, why turnkey makes sense for most people is you're stripping away all of that work and due diligence and the mystery between, you know, between finding a house and vetting contractors and putting the front end financing together and finding the right lender. And the, I mean, there's just so many different pieces. When you come to a turnkey provider, all that's done for you, and you're not spinning your wheels trying to figure it out.
Yep, that's the idea. Yeah, that's the idea.
So you've been at this a number of years, over 10 years. Surely over the 10 years of investing and helping investors invest in real estate, you've come across some pretty awesome deals. Is there one deal that stands out to you as your best deal ever?
Yes and no. You know, I still pinch myself because January will be our 12-year anniversary.
Awesome.
And I look back and I can't believe that I've been doing this for so long. Because it feels like, you know, it just feels like it was yesterday. It's just been a blur. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm glad I was there in the early days, quote unquote, and set the bar where it was. And I keep pushing that bar up. But, you know, it puts me in a kind of a unique situation because I see deals come across my desk all the time. And, you know, there's a saying, you know, the deal of the century comes along once a week. So, you know, if you're looking for the right opportunity and you work with the right people, you can always find good deals in real estate. You know, they're always out there. It's just knowing what, first of all, it's defining what you're looking for and then working with the people that can help you get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as far as the best deal, I think I've had a lot of good deals, so I can't really say one is the best, but maybe I'll kind of give you an abbreviated version of two quick ones. One is long ago and one is recent. Recent as in I'm closing tomorrow.
Wow.
Okay. Long ago, I did acquire, and I have sold, you know, closer to 2008, I did get rid of the property, but I did purchase in 2004 a 40-unit apartment building. I actually bought it from someone who was actually on one of the early episodes of Donald Trump's Apprentice. So it was one of the real estate guys from The Apprentice.
Really? Interesting.
We connected. Yeah, he's a very interesting character. I don't think I would ever do business with him again, having learned what I've learned from him. But needless to say, you know, he kind of crossed my path and he had some properties for sale. And I took a look at some of them and I said, well, I'd be interested in that one. It was a 40-unit apartment building. And we structured the deal in a way where I was able to purchase it with no money down. So I did have to come to the closing table with cash, but through deferred maintenance payments and other, you know, creative financing methods, I was able to get back my my down payment.
Oh, gotcha.
During and after the close. Yeah, so it's effectively I bought a 40-unit apartment building that wasn't completely leased. It only had about 50% occupancy at the time, which was a negotiating tool for me. But it was a no money down deal. So it is possible to do. It's just, you have to have the right conditions in the right place, you know, with, well, the right conditions is the key thing mm-hmm. and the right financing to allow you to do that.
Yeah. Interesting. So how did that work out for you?
It was good for a while, but because it was so far away, and this is, you know what, it's good that you're asking me this question because a lot of the mistakes and lessons that I've learned from that property and the money lost, I was constantly feeding it funds. The lessons I learned in those early days from that transaction are things that I have incorporated into NORADA's, what I call a purchase process checklist. And you know, our due diligence process helps prevent those types of mistakes. And property management is a huge one. I jokingly say, I have two sayings. I have a trademark. It's live where you want, invest where it makes sense. So, you know, we use that for marketing purposes. It's That's a great trademark.
Yep.
Yeah. The second one is you live and die by your property manager. And although that sounds a little harsh and extreme, your investment can be a hassle-free, enjoyable, smooth investment if you have the right property manager, or it could be a bit of a nightmare. So it's critically important that you have the right property manager managing your property, because it's not just a property, it's an asset. So think of them as your asset manager, not just a property manager.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
yeah. More people have been stung, not by the property, not by necessarily by the tenant, but by a bad property management company. And we've burned through a couple over the years until we landed on one that we had to get some ownership in and have more oversight, because it's so critical to the success. So I'm guessing what this 40 unit apartment building had a crappy property manager in place.
Yeah, I went through a couple of them. And the thing is I don't want to get too deep into it, but I'll tell you this, and maybe this is also a lesson learned. I mean, there's so many lessons that came out of that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
A lot of the tenants, because they were low income tenants, they always paid with cash or I think it's like MoneyGram or something like that,
yep.
You know, mm-hmm. Checks.
Yep.
Yeah. And they would hand it over to my property manager at the time, a lady who was actually my real estate agent that was helping me find deals. But the day came when she collected over $6,000 in one day from rents. And she looked at that and she thought, well, geez, you know, I'm single. I have a young daughter that I have to feed. I'm not doing that great in real estate. And there was just an opportunity on the table for her to rip me off. And she stole that money from me, claimed that she dropped it into the UPS to send it over to me, but that never happened. And I just know that she just, you know, took advantage of me. So, you know, you got to have checks and balances in place, and you just got to know that you have the right property manager that you're working with.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they're driving a Lexus. You know something's up.
Yeah. Way nice car.
Where did that car come from?
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of my best and worst deals simultaneously. But, you know, I guess the deal I'm closing on tomorrow is, you know, a great 3-bedroom property in an A neighborhood in the outer Kansas City market, which we're very, very bullish on, the Kansas City market. And I was able to structure it so that I'm purchasing the property at about 75% of the actual appraised value. Now, this is not always doable for most investors, especially if you're not rolling up your sleeves and doing all the heavy lifting and the hard work from the acquisition to the renovation to the managing your teams. I mean, if you're going to be an active real estate investor and do all the work from A through Z, you have the ability to do this. So there's nothing unique about me or this deal that anybody else can't do. I'm just trying to say that, look, you're either an active real estate investor or you're a passive real estate investor. And I actually covered this in detail on, I think, my first episode of my podcast. But you got to know who you are and what you're capable of doing, and define yourself as active or passive. Because if you're passive, then, you know, Ken Corsini can help you. You know, Narada Real Estate can help you, because we're offering you what you can benefit from. But if you want to roll up your sleeves and do the work, then you can get more creative, because you have more control and more risk, but more control over the entire deal. So what I did is I went through a deal A through Z, the acquisition, renovation. My total all-in cost is about 75% of the appraised value on the property. And so I've lined up financing that will finance 75% of the appraised value. And because of that, it's going to be a close to a no down or zero down deal for me. You know, there's going to be some costs here and there and closing costs, but yeah, I mean, that's just going to be a cash cow.
Yep. You know, it's funny. That's, we actually, for a couple of years, 2008, 9, 10, somewhere in there, that was actually our model, believe it or not. Is we would, most people came in with like $5,000. But the market had fallen so fast that there were still pretty good comps that you could sell a property and give these folks hard money, and then they could refinance it with a much higher appraisal, and they were into their permanent financing, like I said, with maybe $5,000 out of pocket, you know, similar [S2] Yep. [S1] To what you're doing, except you're sort of rolling up your sleeves to find the good deal. Interestingly, there's another, I did a podcast early on, right when I launched the Deal Farm. I think it was called What I Would Do With My First $25,000. Like, if I could go back and do it again, how would I spend that first $25,000? And it's the exact same concept. You basically recycle that $25,000 by buying so far below ARV that you're pulling it out and putting permanent financing on a house and then doing it again.
The model works. The model works all the time, but it changes from market to market, because in a depreciating market, you can find a lot of deals. There's the inventories there, and you can get the right price to make it work. But in an appreciating market, which we have today in a lot of markets, you can't do that because you may not get the numbers that you need to make it work, you know.
Right. Your competition is too high. The trick is you've got these trailing comps. If you go back, you know, 6 months, that are not higher, they're lower because the market's on the way up, not on the way down, which makes it tricky to get that, you know, the high ARV that you're looking for.
Yeah, we sold a ton of those 5,000 down deals in Atlanta back in the day.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, people loved it. I mean, to be out of pocket, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 out of pocket is nothing, you know, to control a piece of real estate and have 100% of all the benefits, 100% of the cash flow, 100% of the depreciation, 100% of the amortization of the loan. That's almost a no-brainer. As long as you've got good property management and you're in a decent neighborhood, you've probably mitigated 80% of your risk.
Yep.
Now, today, it's harder to do, but we are actually doing something very similar to what you just described in Memphis. You know, we're talking, again, C-plus neighborhoods, maybe B-minus neighborhoods, 7,000 out-of-pocket. The problem is you can't get enough inventory of them. So we have like one or two at a time, and that's about it. So they exist, but there's not a lot of them.
Yep. You know, so we're actually we got an investor right now who's bought a whole bunch of we had some super inexpensive properties in Atlanta, like $30,000 range. And, we actually owner financed them, and now he's refinancing them. And I think he's going to pull all of his investment back out. Same thing.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
It is doable. It's finding those pockets where it works.
That's right.
So Marco, give us an idea. Where can we send people? I know people have listened to this. They've hung on now for 37 minutes and they're like, man, I want to hook up with Marco and figure out how I can buy in other markets. Where would you send them?
Well, you're too kind. If you can't help them, Ken, then we will be more than happy to help them. All they need to do is contact our office. Probably the website's the easiest, and there's actually two websites. NoradaRealEstate.com, NORADA, realestate.com. That's our real estate website. PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com is the podcast website, but they actually link to each other. So if you go to one, you can go to the other.
So NoradaRealEstate.com, PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. Folks, we're going to put both of those websites on our show notes for today. If you want to reach out to Marco, those are two great places to reach him. Also, his podcast, check it out. Again, it's Passive Real Estate Investing. Marco, man, thanks so much for being on the show.
Appreciate you inviting me, Ken. It's been fun.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks.
Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. If you go to our website right now, dealfarm.net, you have the ability to download our new blueprint. It's called 30 Days to 10K. It's basically the exact blueprint you need to start profiting from wholesaling real estate right now. It's the resources, it's the websites, it's the services that we use. I've even included my exact postcard that I send out. Basically everything you need to start getting deals in the next 30 days. Again, it's at our website, dealfarm.net. Check it out. You can download it for free. Also, we still have our free t-shirt offer. If you want a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt, just subscribe through iTunes to our podcast and give us a 5-star rating, and then go through our website, contact us, give us your name, address, and t-shirt size, and we will send you a t-shirt in the mail immediately. As always, thanks so much for listening to the Deal Farm. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.